you know, it's an election year, yeah? I mean, the beer that everybody associates with America is now called America. I don't know. I don't get it. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Olde. My name is Sam. Joining me today is Dan. How are you, Dan?
I'm great. How are you?
And joining us for the first time, Nathan. How are you?
Second time.
Right. We did parenting.
Same thing.
Right. I have a very tenuous grasp of physics.
That's fine.
Anyway.
Sam's a Time Lord. Yeah.
This is the first time for him, but the second time for you.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I have a hard time in maintaining my own chronological consistency. Anheuser-Busch has announced they're renaming their flagship beer, Budweiser, to America for the remainder of the year. The company, which is owned by Belgian company InBev, announced that the new name and redesigned can would last for the remainder of 2016. The new can features a number of changes, including the name America replacing Budweiser, the slogan King of Beers being replaced by E Pluribus Unum, and the paragraph describing the brewing process replaced with the lyrics of the Star Spangled Banner. Vice President Ricardo Marquez said that this would be the most American summer, which would feature a presidential election, the Olympics, and also the Copa America soccer tournament played on U.S. soil, which shows a clear lack of understanding of most Americans. Dave. Oh, hi, Dave. yeah, so, I mean, this is kind of a cool thing for me because they're going with E Pluribus Unum rather than In God We Trust, which is what one would expect if you were going with the standardized iconography and logos of mottos of the nation, I suppose.
Although Budweiser is really European.
Well, you know, leave it to a Belgian company to explain to Americans what patriotism is really about.
That's what I'm
I mean, what is more American than Belgian huge enormous Belgian corporations celebrating America?
Sure.
Not that I'm letting my politics get a little too much into this, but my politics is totally in, and you know, here we are.
Well, like a mega corporation pandering to a particular local audience with claims of patriotic ideals. I don't think that's really anything new.
No, smells like apple pie to me.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely do approve of going with E Pluribus Unum. A much more unifying former national motto than the current national motto.
Yeah.
In God We Trust. But I probably still won't drink Budweiser, but that's more a personal taste thing. But I would feel
less bad about
using it to cook chicken.
Well, yeah. I'll probably have some decorative cans in here at some point.
Oh,
because,
for sure.
Yeah, because it's got E Pluribus Unum on it. And that's kind of a big deal for us. I mean, I've done two fights now about keeping God weirdness outside of local government.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, join the Original Motto Project, Humanists of Washington, and the Ask an Atheist Gang and others on June 29th at 11 a.m. for a rally in Olympia to raise awareness for the motto we believe our nation deserves, as well as Budweiser, apparently. E Pluribus Unum. Take part in a secular alternative to Reverend Franklin Graham's rally being held at the same time on the Capitol steps, in which he intends to preach the gospel as part of his Decision America tour. Go to bringbackourmotto.com for more information. I just thought that was, you know, here we go.
No, for sure. It's like the best segue ever, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
One thing I kind of like about the cans here, we are losing things like bar bets thanks to the internet. And I was once told, I'm not a historian, so I can't document this, but that our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, the tune is taken from a British drinking song.
Yes.
Yes.
And the reason it is so challenging to sing was that this song was used in bars to determine whether or not they would serve you another drink, that they would serve your table another round. If you could still get through the song, you know, and do the words in key.
Well, it is.
It was that difficult that, you know, okay, if you can get through that, then
it,
you're
it is actually a pretty technically challenging song.
It's not super easy. But the thing is, now they've gone and printed the lyrics on the beer can, thus defeating the purpose.
Well, but if you're thinking musically, you know.
Right, if it's only got to be on key. But, you know, most
people.
I won't say most people can't sing on key, but a lot of people can't sing on key.
That's a hard song
already.
To do, man. You know,
it is a hard song.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
But I think it's cheating to have the lyrics like printed right there on the source of your inebriation. Oh, say can you
You've already lost. I'm not serving you. So maybe if you can stay on key and read the weirdly cursive lyrics, which no one can read anymore.
They're a little hard to read.
Including myself.
I hope they're printed in like size 6 font, though. So like, you know, if you're even like marginally drunk, it gets kind of blurry. Like,
yeah.
Well.
But I'm actually surprised they took a side on this one. I mean, I don't think they meant to take a side. I just think it would look nice, so let's put it there. But then why not go with the motto everybody seems to love so much?
Well, I wonder if maybe in Belgium they have laws about corporate and secular interests or something like that. Maybe they could not print in God We Trust on the cans.
But the stuff is made here. The cans are made here. I imagine American law might prevail there.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm just kind of happy about it.
Right, yeah. It's cool. I'll definitely be picking up some to at least have the cans. Yeah, for sure. Whether or not I drink it or not, that will be...
Well, yeah.
Right. I hope they can...
I mean, I've got cans of Spam in here from 1996, so, you know, I can... I think a couple of cans of beer can sit next to it. A company that sells wristbands has donated all the profits from an order for a creationist group to a pro-science charity. Rapid Wristband sells silicon wristbands with messages for groups. When a creationist group ordered 100,000 wristbands with the slogan Debunk Evolution on them, the company decided to fulfill the order and donate all the money earned to the National Center for Science Education. Rapid Wristband CEO Friaz Priani said that he was thrilled to support a group that had worked for years to keep creationism out of public schools. All right, so my question here is... Now that we know where the money's going, and I am kind of a fan of weird stuff like this, would you guys buy such a wristband if you knew that that some of the profits might go to this creationist group, but a lot of the profits are going to go to the National Center for Science Education?
If I was going to buy one, I would probably buy it to hang on the wall, like maybe wrapped around one of those, you know, America cans. Like just a, you know, it's just like a sort of like a trophy thing here, you know.
That's
like,
pretty American.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's not my personal preference to drink the beer, and it's not my personal preference to wear a wristband. Even ironically, it's just not me. But that is kind of a thing I would like to have around. Is sort of like remember when?
Yeah,
yeah. It's a good in joke too. So it's always
it is and. It might, well, I mean, I might wear it because it might be like one of those things that people who like to handy chick tracks do, which is wear a button or something like that says something weird on it, and then somebody asks you about it, and then now you're locked in for a story for 20 minutes where you get to have things that you've known since you were 8 explained to you for the 37 millionth time. Not that I'm bitter about this, but this is a thing that happens, especially when... I tend to notice stuff like that.
Ask me about my misunderstanding of the math.
this story reminds me a little bit of the guy from last year that had this iPhone Bible app that turns out that he's really an atheist, and it's like one of the most popular apps, and he's gotten tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Please tell me it's Open Bible. Tell me it's Open Bible.
No, it is. I can't remember which one it is, but yeah.
I think I grabbed mine from Project Gutenberg, which is kind of, right, know, makes sense under the circumstances.
Right.
That's a joke people who might download. Whatever. I was about to make a really terrible joke. So there's a guy on iPhone writing iPhone apps, and he's an atheist, and he wrote a Bible app.
Yeah, I think it was a Spanish Bible app or something like that, and he had it. It was something that I think he was having a problem finding the right thing, and so he says, "Well, I'll just do this." And he's like a ex-Mormon or something, and
right.
So he just did it and wasn't expecting it to really be a big hit. He just wanted to have some little thing out there and practice making an app or whatever. And then it turns out a few years later, it turned out to be pretty successful, and now he's actually earning, you know, like almost a regular salary or something off of just this one app that he has no personal interest in other than the fact that it's his app, right?
I wonder if any, I wonder how, when people find out about that.
They weren't super excited when people found out, but I don't think it really stopped people too much because it was like a good app, so.
Right. Well. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're back in the law stuff, which seems to be a lot of what we're doing right now.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-Free Football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC. 844-753-7842. The laws continue, or weird stuff continues. A Mississippi mayor has claimed that prayers have fixed the potholes in his town. Mayor Tony Yarber of Jackson posted on a Twitter last year that he believed that prayer could fix potholes. Yarber recently posted a PSA video describing the city's Pothole Blitz campaign intended to fix the town's roads. When skeptics questioned if it was really prayer that fixed the potholes, Yarber insisted that his prayers were answered and directed people to the infrastructure plan on the city's website.
Sounds like he doesn't know secular government from a hole in the ground.
Hey! Oh. Yeah, you were saving that one, weren't you?
It was just puddling up in there.
Oh, Pothole Blitz. Honestly, this is sort of the prayer model. Not as Christians would have you believe that God is directly answering prayers. You say a prayer, then you pass a bucket around and people put money in it, and then you spend that money on whatever you were praying about. I mean, that is the model, is it not?
Sure. I mean, that's a positive reinforcement. It's kind of you're forgetting when it doesn't work, but...
I mean, if we didn't have that, would we really have prayer? Question. He says that prayer has been answered, and then he's like, "Well, okay, how about details? Was mass created? How physics violating are we get here?" And he points to his infrastructure plan, where infrastructure plans, you talk about spending money to do stuff like filling potholes. Unless you live in Tacoma, then the potholes stay,
right?
Because it's Tacoma.
It's our heritage. They're vintage potholes.
Vintage potholes, yeah.
It's the hipsters, probably.
I love this town, not so much the potholes.
What I want to know is, are the potholes that were filled in by prayer qualitatively different from potholes that have been filled in by other means? Like, is it a miracle? Like, there is no evidence of this pothole whatsoever.
Oh.
Like the Lord used superior asphalt and just made it look like the rest of the road. Or is there, like, an outline around it so you have, like, this little tiny segment of very holy asphalt, and then just the regular road.
And the Lord came forth with half a cup of gravel and a teaspoon of tar and filled all of the potholes in the town out of the mixer.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, so if these are, like, divine-filled potholes, then I think it's reasonable to assume that the asphalt in them is going to be higher quality, more durable. And what we're going to get is the opposite of potholes 20 years down the road, so to speak, as the cars wear away the asphalt around the filled holes. And instead of having potholes, we'll have pot lumps.
Right.
That would be worse.
It's like donut holes. Yeah.
Just the but depending on your creationist beliefs, erosion may or may not be real. So, well, yeah.
Wait,
well, what if
erosion may or not be? That's a new one on me. Erosion may or may not be real.
Geologic time.
Fossils.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Grand Canyon flood 6,000 years.
Yeah. Well, I thought with the Kent Hovind stuff with former ex-con Kent Hovind, because I always describe him that way.
Right. Yeah.
No, ex-con, not former ex-con.
Former ex-con.
Yeah. Whatever.
He's now a con again.
Yeah. yeah. He believed in hypererosion.
Hyper erosion.
Yeah, where the Grand Canyon was like created in 20 minutes.
Like the Lord just came down with a mighty Makita belt sander. Just,
yeah, this land's too flat. We need a big hole in it. So let's, yeah.
I want to know what the grit and the RPM were on that sander. I'm also thinking on these potholes, could we take that holy pothole material and like collect it up and then like use it for something else?
Like Captain America's shield?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, can God make a surface so hard that even his belt sander cannot sand it?
Way to bring it back around.
Joking aside, dumb theology questions aside, this is just stupid election year posturing. Again, this is the election process turned into professional wrestling, which is not to say that it hasn't always kind of been like professional wrestling, but it's a little weird this year.
What's wrong with professional wrestling?
Nothing. Nothing. But I don't want the Ultimate Warrior determining whether or not, I have the right to free association through a SmackDown.
I, for one, am voting for Camacho for 2016.
Fair point.
Yokozuna all the way.
A 26-year-old man from Spencer, Iowa, was narrowly saved from a suicide attempt at a faith-based medical care center. Alex Jacobson had abruptly quit his psychiatric medications against the wishes of his family and the advice of his doctor just before entering the Spencer Dream Center, recommended by his Assembly of God pastor, Reverend Nick Hangs. The center replaced medication with Bible study and claims to heal patients by using prayer, scripture memorization, and developing a closer relationship with God. While Jacobson survived slicing his neck with a box cutter, his family said they remained wary of faith-based treatment.
It's another one of these things where if you were to ask anybody about it, they'd probably say, "Well, he didn't pray hard enough."
Right.
Which,
right. If only his faith had been stronger, he wouldn't have taken a box cutter to his own throat.
Which, that's probably even more horrible than the actual fulfilling the med needed. Yeah.
I know of at least one broken nose out there in the world belonging to someone who said something just like that.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we start out with a place called Spencer Dream Center. Which sounds straight out of the Twilight Zone, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm expecting it to have something to do with dolphins.
That seems remarkably new agey for something that might be recommended by the Assembly of God. Which, okay, it has its own uniqueness in some places, but so it's Dream Center. They call it the Dream Center, and instead of taking your medication, which apparently for this guy was working pretty okay. I mean,
it sounded like he was pursuing other things. Maybe it wasn't working perfectly, but then again, he wasn't trying to kill himself with box cutters.
Right. And then you're put in a situation where people in authority around you are making you remember lines from a book that you may or may not understand, and then speaking to unseen powers that control the universe.
Which is just what you want people with psychiatric problems.
This strikes me as a bad idea, but this is faith healing just like any other sort of faith healing, and apparently works just as well, unfortunately. Yeah.
Mental illness is just as real an illness as any other kind of illness, and it requires proper medical treatment, psychiatric treatment, medical interventions if necessary. You can't heal actual illnesses with faith.
Right. I kind of wondered if I would go into this because there is such a stigma attached to mental illness. But the thing about a lot of medical injuries is if you're missing a limb, that's something you can see. If you're going through chemo and your hair is falling out, there's physical evidence of that. And while you know, medical illnesses are indeed illnesses and need and require medical treatment. Boy, howdy do I know that. It's not as visible and not as obvious. And it's kind of like how so many miracles have just stopped happening with the advent of phones with cameras on them.
Yeah.
That this might
Bigfoot.
Be, yeah, like Bigfoot. Who's seen Bigfoot other than a mannequin dressed up in an ape suit and an ice block?
Bigfoot actually is probably just blurry.
Yeah,
like you can't take a good picture of him because he's like just
in
blurry.
Focus.
He's actually
it's
blurry.
Still blurry. Right? Yeah,
but maybe like a lot of places are doing this. Like they're focusing on mental health because it's what they got left.
Well, sure, but a lot of people though too would, and I'm not necessarily in that camp, but they would put religion, at least certain parts of religion, also in the mental illness or delusional type. Thoughts, and so you're taking one form of mental delusions or thoughts and replacing it or enhancing it or compounding it with another. It's like if I broke your arm a little bit and then I just go and break your arm a whole bunch, well, your original break might not really be very seen, but you know, there's consequences. Yeah,
because the other end of that is the Peter Popoff thing where he has
I was thinking.
Yeah, where he has people in walkers walk for 3 or 4 steps and like, oh look, you're healed, it's great, let's move on. And then the minute the camera stops looking at him, the lady falls over.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She doesn't have her walker anymore, and nobody thought to give it back to her.
Right.
Because she's healed now.
Right.
And, you know.
And which was also fully debunked, too, because it was the wife or the whatever was feeding him the info through the radio. I know.
Yeah. Jeez.
How do they do that? How do you have somebody. This is the thing that's always sort of puzzled me about these sorts of things. How do you have someone exposed as a con artist quite publicly, you know, and have to get interviewed about it, retract their statements? And
I don't think he ever retracted.
Well, maybe not this particular guy, but the point is you've had somebody publicly widely debunked, you know, across all stretches of media, you know, where they've had to basically come forward to it and say, you know, I did terrible
things. Generally,
clean up my act. And then people go back to believing them, or they never stop believing them. It blows my mind.
Well, I would think these people would be generally pretty good at convincing other people of stuff. And that's not going to, you know, some trivial thing like being outed or having criminal charges or like being in jail for a few years or having to move to a new city with nothing because you're ousted from the previous community. All those things aren't actually hampers on their actual talent, right? If I'm a good carpenter, I can build a house no matter where I am.
Right.
So these people can convince. You're right.
I think the actual mythology involved is fairly important, because let's talk about two people that James Randi is known for debunking.
Right.
Within about 10 years of each other. And the first one is James Heidrick, who appeared on that show with Bob Barker. I can't remember. But it's like, what's
the
my
Price is Right?
No, what's my line or something?
The other one.
Where he said he was James Heidrick was this guy from Utah who said, I have psychic power, and he would do this by, with his mind, moving a pencil and turning the pages of a phone book. And so he was approached by James Randi, and he accepted Randy's challenge, and it happened on television, and all James Randi did mainly was he said, look, I can do the pencil thing myself. I don't think this makes any sense. So let's focus on the page turning. I think he's doing it by breathing on the pages. So he puts these foam peanuts around the phone book. And he says, if you're blowing, we'll see it. And then he sits there for like 20 minutes and nothing happens. He says, yeah, I can't do it anymore because of static electricity. He tries to make up some sort of excuse. There's three witnesses. One of them has a degree in like metaphysics from somewhere. One of them is an actual physicist, and then somebody else, and the guy who plays maybe the guy who plays the Incredible Hulk, if I'm remembering this properly.
That's a good Lou Ferrigno.
No, the other one.
Oh,
that's right. Not Incredible Hulk. The other guy. The not Hulk guy. I'm not Mike. I don't know these names.
No. It's all right.
Okay. He's discredited. He admits to being discredited. He appears you hear from him every now and again, but he always admits that he was conning people. He admits it. Now you got Peter Popoff. He takes the Christian milieu. He goes up in front of thousands of people as the father of his church, as his little micropope to his flock. And and he's their leader, and he's their faith healer, and he's preaching something from that sounds a lot like the prosperity gospel, if it isn't actually. And part of the Christian mythos, part of the Christian mythology is forgiveness, and specifically forgiveness of your leaders, even if they don't put it that way. So he gets found out when James Randi goes to one of his events and has a radio with him and manages to listen to his wife reading him facts into his invisible earpiece thingy while he's on stage. And she's even, like, taunting him and stuff like that. If you can't hear me, you're in deep trouble. That sort of thing. Like, in the recording, it's clear that they know they're conning people.
Right.
So he gets found out. He disappears for a long time. He's forgiven, but eventually he's forgiven, and by 2006, he's back on stage, back doing precisely what he was doing before, and Inside Edition, or one of them, one of those types of shows, are trying to get an interview with him, and basically chases him into his Porsche.
Well, obviously, it's working really well for him.
My point precisely is, I think what you have here is, on one side, you have this martial arts, from an American perspective, new agey thing going on. And on the other hand, you have this this mythology with this innate faith, not only in God, but in those who speak for God. Along with this, you must forgive and let the leaders continue to be leaders once they've basically taken your money and run. It's like, I think this is, to me, this was a foundational sort of, like, the juxtaposition of these two situations was one of the things that I think may have brought me here. So I was not expecting to go up like that. But that's, is that the difference between just like, hey, I have chi powers or key powers, and then saying, hey, Jesus has given me power? I think the mythology has something to do with it.
Yeah, I have a coworker who is absolutely convinced that stage magicians are actual sorcerers, and we had this conversation about it, you know, the other day, and he was talking about how, you know, in medieval times there were all these legends about wizards and stuff, and now we just call them magicians, and they're all, you know, doing magic as shows because they can make more money doing it that way. And there were a few of us there, and we all just kind of ended up looking at this person going like, wow, like really, like. Wow.
I think, and the other side of that is the whole Ted Cruz thing, which is God told him, or he claims that God told him to run. Mm-hmm. And as last I checked, he's not the forerunner for the Republican Party. So did God actually tell him? Did he misinterpret it? Is God like wanted him to run, but now doesn't want him to run?
Maybe it's like tough love and God just thought he needed to be taken down a notch.
Yeah, so like how do these things get reconciled, you know, even if you ask it from within their own system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, isn't Donald Trump the only person who now the presumptive candidate for the GOP?
Yes.
Is he not the only GOP candidate who did not say God told him to run? I seem to have that being rubbed in my face.
Yeah, he's not really.
He's not really religious, but he can pretend. I mean,
he's good at that.
Yeah, his favorite book is Corinthians 2.
Yeah,
this time it's personal.
The revenge.
Yeah,
of the Corinthians.
but that just goes to Bill Hicks material. Yeah. God might be screwing with our heads. I am paraphrasing.
Right.
Okay. But to go back to what you were talking about your friend, and this may, if this is too personal, I'll drop it right away. Don't you work at a science center?
Yeah, this isn't one of the science people.
Okay.
Just checking.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I try not to judge, but holy cats.
Yeah.
So illusions.
Right. Yeah. They had an interesting argument prepared about, you know, sort of explaining their own cognitive dissonance about it, but that they just want the world to be more interesting than it is.
Well, I definitely understand that.
I don't, because where I work, we do teach science, and we show people that the world is more interesting than you ever thought, regardless of, you know, the non-existence of magic.
Well, okay, I guess I could. I understand the world wanting to be more interesting in that for people like me who aren't scientists or science educators, I'd like a world that maybe is more participatory in its interestingness, because there's a lot of interesting stuff that's happening around me all the time that I'm not really a part of.
Sure.
And so while some people might want wizards and wizards or space wizards or you know, magicians or whatever, I'd like faster than light drives and closed time light curves. Personally, which is sort of my wish for a more interesting universe. But the difference here is the mythologies that I'm paying attention to, I don't think are real.
Right.
I'm not trying to influence you. Okay, but there, I guess these people do exist now. But I was going to say, I'm not trying to convince you that the Jedi are real.
Well, sure. And I think a lot of these people are also, they want it to be more interesting, but they don't have enough education to really have enough experience with really cool things that science can teach us, all sorts of crazy things that happen, much more interesting than any mythology.
Yeah,
I could see that sort of being a thing. Like, if you're not trained or practiced in scientific thought or skepticism, it can be really hard to tell the noise from the static, or the signal from the static, rather. That, you know, if you're seeing pseudoscientific claims represented as scientific claims, you may not be able to discern which ones are which.
Right. I mean, a lot of the reasons I got into the things that I've gotten into is because it seemed a lot like magical powers. I mean, the whole concept of electromagnetic radiation and, you know, using basically waves that sit in the substrate of your world and communicate to, it seemed a lot like action at a distance to me. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm into this. I mean, I didn't call it that at the time, but it really, using crystals to build radios and you know, stuff like that, it's like, yeah, this is straight up magic here, right? This is cool, but it's not. It's actually physics.
And the thing is, it's not only is it explicable, but it's also, it's testable and it's accurate for predicting.
But there's also
future outcomes.
There's also a part of it that that will always remain kind of separate from me, because I don't have the ability myself to directly perceive literally the waves I'm creating. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'll be back in a moment. Probably talk about this.
...48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
Out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is, it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee. ANNEXradio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. So, before we went into the break, I may have said something that you take some issue with a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, you said that radio is a little bit like magic to you because you cannot perceive the waves that you are creating.
Well, not directly.
But when we're talking about radio waves, what we're talking about is photons that exist on a spectrum.
Yeah.
Part of that spectrum is visible to you as light, starting at the near infrared into the
right.
The
but I'm specifically talking about the stuff that I was creating with the circuits building. That was outside of my ability to perceive directly.
Yeah, but you can build a machine that can.
Yeah, but that's a layer of abstraction. This is. I mean, I love this stuff. Don't get me wrong. But that was if we're trying to convince my. My 8-year-old self that mm-hmm. it's as cool as we think it is. It's this stuff that I couldn't see, and boy, wouldn't it be great if I could see it directly? And I can't. However, I have this awesome technology that lets me see all sorts of stuff. Like just in the last few years, I got my hands on a software-defined radio for the first time, mm-hmm. an SDR, which is a quick description is it's most of a radio. It's the part of the radio that receives that actually receives the electromagnetic radiation, a really nice analog to digital converter straight into the computer, so that most of the demodulation and the processing done on the radio is done on a computer, which lets you do things like that were more difficult, which previously, like listen to use interesting digital communications, write radios mostly in software rather than hardware, and a ton of really awesome visualizations. So for the first time in my life, I actually got to see what amplitude modulation looked like compared to frequency modulation, compared to single sideband, compared to some sort of digital like PSK31 or something like that. And that was a real... eye-opener for me. It's not like I'm an RF engineer. There's a lot of gaps in my knowledge, but there's a lot of stuff that I would visualize one way, and then when I'm finally seeing it in these 2D waterfall plots, I'm like, wow, I was way off on how that looks like. I thought it would look completely different. And on stuff that I pay even more attention to, like AM.
So I have a question for you about this. This is something that scientists and science enthusiasts are often accused of ruining the magic by making the explanation.
Uh-huh.
Seeing all this stuff laid out for you, understanding better how it works, did it ruin it?
Well, no, I was pretty well invested by this point. I don't know how it would work for some. I don't know how it would work for the younger me.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
The younger you is the older you.
I would disagree with that.
It's just a matter of time that you've gained a higher understanding. So would you say that you are jaded on radio, understanding how it works?
No, just different.
Yeah.
I'm not calling
your enthusiasm remains, right?
Yes. I mean, it's tempered in some ways.
So the explanation didn't ruin it?
No.
No, in fact, I think for a lot of people, I've heard this description, and the primary example is rainbows, how rainbows are made, you know, the 42 degrees and the water droplets and the refraction and all this other kind of stuff. But once you actually learn about this actually relatively complicated thing, rather than God did it.
Right.
it's actually...
to say the world isn't going to be wet anymore.
Right. Is a little bit more interesting,
right.
And in fact, really... Now I have all these other questions about other prisms and other liquids and other air, and you know, it opens up so much more and so many more questions, and it's much more elegant of an answer too, because it ties in with everything else.
Well, I'm going to say objection leading the witness a little bit. Did the magic die? Actually, on reflection, yes, it did, but it was replaced with something else that overall I think is better. But whether you think it replaced magic, which is, you know, that one, was it a Far Side cartoon where it was equations and then a box and it said, here a miracle occurs.
Yeah.
It replaced the here a miracle occurs with something understandable, and then that sense of the magic was replaced with inquisitiveness. And it's like, all right, now I want to know what's happening inside that box, which I would say was ended up being a lot cooler than just thinking, I guess I'm Harry Potter if I'm looking for a modern analog.
Right, and I would like to point out, because you know you don't always get a lot of credit for this, but you went from being a kid fascinated with radio, that you know radio was sort of this magical thing, but you wanted to understand it, and the path of wanting to understand has led you to a point where you're no longer a kid fascinated with radio or an adult fascinated with radio. You're a grown adult with a home-built radio studio, their own radio program. And I wish people could look around the room when we're recording this, because every piece of equipment here is cobbled together from other pieces of equipment by Sam and mostly home programmed by Sam.
Not anymore. I got this really awesome mixer now.
But this is my point is this is what an interest in something, being willing to sacrifice the magic in order to understand it, can lead you to so much more depth and so much more meaning.
Right. I mean, that's basically it, is it replaced playing in fantasy with playing in, you know, playing with something that in reality. And I think that moment of taking that, of understanding what I was seeing for the first time, that I'd only seen in equations or schematics or something like that, and finally seeing it plotted out on 2D on something that I could play with myself rather than, say, a $75,000 visual spectrum analyzer, was a pretty life-changing event for me. And it also made me, I think, a better at communicating what's awesome about radio, because I don't think if I'd started doing that, I would have been able to run the Crystal Radio unit at Camp Quest Northwest.
Right.
Which everybody thought at the time, I didn't have a lot of people who were on my side, because my first part was literally cups and strings screaming into the cups and explaining how that's amplitude modulation. And that's the same thing that makes AM radio work. And now you're going to build an AM radio. What you're basically looking at is cups and strings, but instead of a string, you have the, you know...
Right. You're not vibrating the string anymore. You're vibrating reality.
Well, you're vibrating...
Particles, waves.
Photons, right. Which are not...
The particle wave thingies.
Thingies, yeah. Yeah. And that's where it all falls apart, and I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Right. We're venturing back into this is magic territory, but we'd like to understand it.
We are. I mean, you're a technical guy. What was your story similar to mine in this case?
Well, I mean, I guess part of my fascination has always been around technology. My dad still is a software engineer, and so I've just sort of, it's been a part of me for my whole life. And there's always little bits, you know, there's always some other abstraction layer or some other obscure corner that I have no idea how that thing works, but I can maybe figure, I don't know. And then you go find out what it is, you're like, oh, that's really cool. Or, hey, it's just like this other thing, but totally different. And you gain all these understandings and you just keep going from there. It's never ending. So
no.
I at least have that going for me, inquisitiveness wise. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about computers, there's stuff that... Well, now it's getting kind of a little weird, because as I'm getting older, I'm getting to the point now where there's things that... I used to... If there's something that I didn't understand and I needed and I was using it, it's like I wanted to know how it worked. And I took it apart and I spent hours and hours and hours trying to figure out how it worked. I'm at the point now where I'm a little bit like, do I really need to know how EFI works? Do I really need to know how these things work to do what I need to do? And now my answer is starting to become no. And I just sort of move on from that. And I do sort of wonder, am I losing my sense of inquisitiveness when I say, nah, I don't really need to know that, I can move on?
Well, I think it's more of a selective inquisitiveness. You're not burning your cycles on something that you think are going to be ultimately maybe a little more boring than what you are hoping to be. And plus, you know that magic doesn't actually exist. So, well, yeah. EFI is pretty magical in both of our heads.
Yeah.
Well, we know there's some actual real world mechanisms in which all this stuff takes place, and
mostly designed to keep you away from using your hardware. But I
and if you
whatever.
Wanted to understand it, you could.
I could.
Right.
Yeah. After about 10 years. Well, this got oddly therapeutic for me. I was not expecting that. Shall we do an email?
Yeah.
Sure.
Alrighty. Sierra from the internet writes: how would atheists define culture? What is the culture of an atheist community? Nathan, I think you're the one sort of closest to this one, so why don't I hand it to you for a definition?
Well, atheism is not a worldview to start off, so you're kind of already there's a little bit of nomenclature issues, but generally, at least in the Northwest around here, people who are skeptics or atheists or humanists or other, you know, reasonable secular people, or atheists for good reasons, not just atheists because they don't know what's going on or whatever. A lot of the culture stuff is still defined by some relatively basic things, like the need for people to not be harmed, and there's a certain level of empathy, and you build up from there. You build these cultures of humanity, as we see in a modern first world society that actually cares about other people, and we can create systems, and it's about communicating to other people and raising the next generation and all these other sort of kind of generic things. But again, atheism itself is not a worldview, so it's really hard to nail anything down specifically. But certainly, you don't need to. There's a little bit of the, does atheism remove humanity? And certainly it does not remove anything.
Speak for yourself, human.
That's no. Right.
Dan?
I sort of look at atheism as oftentimes a subculture, although a lot of people are atheists that sort of exist in isolation. They're not really part of an atheism community. When I think about the idea of culture, I think about generational knowledge. Mm-hmm. I think about particular practices or rituals or behaviors, holidays, that kind of thing. And most importantly, I think about unique language. And within the English-speaking culture of atheism that I'm familiar with, we certainly have our own unique language. We have in-jokes and references that would not make sense to a person who is not, you know, a part of this culture.
Right.
And I think it's something that we all learn when we start going to atheist events or hanging out with other atheists. We start to pick this up phrase by phrase, word by word. So, I mean, yeah, just like punk rock has a subculture, or in fact, subcultures, many, many cultures, atheism has its own culture and locally its own subcultures. But unless you are really active politically in like national organizations, you're going to be a part of a probably more local or internet localized subculture. But
yeah, I mean, how would atheists define culture? I think how would sociologists define culture?
Sure.
I've heard sociologists define that, and I thought, yeah, that. Let's go with that. Yeah. Can I recite it for you? No, I'm not that smart. The shared knowledge, the generational knowledge, the in language, the stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's all a really good point. And then, what is the culture of an atheist community? And I.
Which one?
Yeah, which one? I think is the thing is if we were just atheists and that was it, there'd be no need for any culture whatsoever. But I think when you take into account the larger context of we are atheists in the United States in the 21st century, existing in this Christian social substrate, we're all facing a lot of the same advantages and disadvantages in being in this position. And we'd like to talk to each other about it to see how we get through this thing called life, if I may quote. And that defines a community. How that looks, what that looks like, what the mores or what the language is of the community. Having been, you know, across the country and talking to different atheist communities, there is, thanks to the internet, there is a lot of shared culture, but there's a lot of culture that isn't. Like, there's stuff that we could talk about here on Ask an Atheist that would only be meaningful to the 25 or 30 people who regularly go to Ask an Atheist post shows.
Like the Ramp the Shuffle.
Like the Ramp the Shuffle. Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I would actually hold that up as one of my biggest successes with Ask an Atheist, is the fact that Ask an Atheist, I could say, you know what, I'm done. I'm done with this radio thing. I'm totally burned on it, and I'm walking away. But the Ask an Atheist post show community
would still be there.
Would be there without me doing anything about it for years. Because now there's a culture where once there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't build it, but I'd like to think that I provided the seed crystal and the supersaturated solution, I think would might be a good way to put it. But that's when we're talking about atheism. And when we start talking about what, you know, atheism as a disclaimer of philosophy. You know, saying you're an atheist is saying what you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I am a humanist. I'm a secular humanist. I'm a member of the American Humanist Association. You know, I pay my dues, and I find myself increasingly identifying as one of them. And why would humanists have any sort of culture? Why would humanists congregate? For the same reason that any religious group would get together, would have a congregation. And that's because they're like-minded people who want to talk about, just like with the atheism community, who want to talk about to each other, help each other out, and communicate about what it's like being what you are in this wider culture. And I mean, that's one facet of it. There's going to be as many facets as there are members, if we're being honest. But that's what it means to me.
I think that's that is a pretty complete summary. I guess one thing I left out here when we're talking about culture, there's a lot of interest in this in biology right now because it's been determined that many intelligent animals and even some less intelligent animals appear to have their own regional dialects, their own regional behavior patterns that aren't done by other members of the same species. This is something that you see in songbirds, members of the same species of songbird on different coasts of North America using entirely different songs with entirely different mating behaviors, but they are genetically the same species. Here in Puget Sound, we have the southern resident orca community. They share a dialect, a diet, and numerous behaviors between these three pods that are not shared by other orcas anywhere else on the planet. So looking at the idea of culture, I would also want to apply some of the tenets of biology here, where it's like we have unique behavior patterns. We have a somewhat closed group, or at least a group that only encircles the members that are a part of it. It doesn't extend to every member of the species. And then a unique language as well.
Okay. I would say we do, you know, invite. I mean, our.
Oh, sure. No, yeah. No, we're inviting. I mean, we're not a genetically isolated population. You know? I mean, but we are an identifiable population separate from other cultures within our larger culture.
Yeah. But another thing about atheist communities is being a member of an atheist or a humanist community is a relatively recent thing for me. It's only been exactly the last 10 years. I've now been doing this since 2006. And, you know, when I saw that thing on CNN and go, what, that's what they think of us? Well, okay. I guess I got my work cut out for me. But then, you know, there's this other thing where the culture I grew up in, that's definitely, you know, the Chicago in the 80s and 90s. And then I think more personally, I'm almost way more a member of sort of the open source computer culture than I think is I can't. That's the thing that sort of defines the way I think in a lot of ways and a lot of cultural shorthand I might use to explain certain situations, which when I'm in the atheist community, then I have to stop and go, right, okay, you don't know this story. Here we go. And that's kind of what I was thinking. You know, you're also kind of in the same culture.
Well, sure, it's a little different, but it's and you always have these different overlaps. And what I find too, it's hard to do sometimes is you have these groups that are very similar minded, but they're not quite identical. And so it's always hard to kind of feel the room and see, okay, everybody here is here for, you know, this atheist thing, but. Mm. Everybody here is also computer people, and so we end up talking about computer stuff or
that's
whatever.
True. Well, here
that happens a lot here,
well,
or whatever.
Honestly, it's been interesting because I've been kind of out of that, out of the sort of wider computer culture for a while since I decided to get out of it, I guess. And then so when you're here, I go, oh wow, okay, there's this stuff that I can talk about, which I try to talk about with other people, and they just don't care about it. And
yeah.
Okay, let's talk about it. Yay!
You're going to see the eyes go glossy. Just
yeah, you see that a little bit. I imagine you're not unfamiliar with that idea.
A little.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got some people to thank while we're at the top of the hour here. I'd like to thank Hera from Seattle and Anne from the internet in meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is Peggy from Kent Locals Challenge, the listeners of Ask an Atheist, to help us keep the lights on. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, and it'll take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production, whether that's airtime or this newfangled device I have sitting next to me that's making my life significantly easier. I'd like to thank everybody who helped me make that. Again, go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, goes right to our PayPal page, and it really helps. Thank you, guys. But that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam. Thank you, Dan.
Of course.
Thank you, Nathan, for your second appearance on Ask an Atheist. That's second.
Thank you, Sam.
You can go to askanatheist.tv, email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, give us a voicemail at 844-753-7842, Twitter us at Ask an Atheist WA. Yeah, that's it. And we'll see you guys next week.